The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello, and you're very welcome along to the Home Show podcast. This is News Talk's programme about homes and housing and interiors and architecture. My name is Sinead Ryan. Coming up this week, TV presenter and actor Baz Ajmawi on his house and kitchen renovation and why his mammy may look for 50 ways to kill him. Designing a home for disability and sensory challenges, a rubbish eating machine that converts food waste into energy, and why dark wood is making a comeback. If you'd like to get involved in The Home Show, well, you can email us throughout the week at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You can search for me, Sinead Ryan, on Instagram and X, and I do love to hear from pod listeners over there. And don't forget that, of course, all our shows are up on the Go Loud app. Now, he hasn't managed to kill his mammy just yet, despite the 50 attempts at doing it, but it's just possible she may want to kill him. Baz Ajmawi and his family have moved in with Nancy while they are renovating their home, and Baz joins me now to tell me how it's going. How is it going, Baz?
A man on the edge, I feel, somewhat. Look, we're very lucky we'd somewhere to go. It's quite a stressful thing. Everyone tells you doing renovations is stressful, but it's a full-time job. We're getting close. We're getting close.
Poor old Nancy. That's who I'm thinking of. Is she okay with you all landing on her?
I love that. My mum always gets the empathy. do you know what? My mum is back and forth from the Canaries. She is a place out there, and she spends a lot of time with the Golden Girls out there, and they have a great time. So we're very lucky in the fact that we just kind of have the house to ourselves, and every couple of weeks or months, my mum pops back for a week or two, you know.
Right. So, I'm wondering if she's spending more time out there now since you descended on her. Do you think
I wonder if she's not able for teenagers again is the bigger question. I think that's what it is. I'm sharing a room with a 13-year-old girl at the moment, and there's only so much a dad has to know about slick back hair videos that you can tolerate, you know.
Listen, you'll be down cool with the kids after all of this. How many of you have moved into Nancy's home?
So I only have my two youngest, two teenagers, a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, and me and Tanya. But we're very home birds, so we're looking forward to getting home, to be honest. You know?
So tell me about home then. What are you doing, and why did you decide to renovate?
Well, it's nothing really structural. It's just renovating, you know. It's just making the house kind of work better for our family as it is now. Even though we only have the two youngest living with us, we've a daughter in Birmingham, and, you know, she's in college over there. She's finished now, so she might come back. And then we have the older kids, and they're always around. Even though they don't live there, they're constantly, it's like they never moved out. I probably see more of them now than when they were living in the house.
I'm thinking they're probably getting great dinners. Is that it?
They probably are. They're getting better dinners than me because they come at better times home to the house, and then I arrive home and there's no food left. So that happens a lot. But yeah, it's just kind of modernizing the house to work with our family. They're not little anymore. So like a big room for us was, say, the kitchen is a huge room in our house. It's just where everyone congregates, and we just, it wasn't working for us anymore, and we just wanted to freshen it up and make it feel future-proof a bit, you know.
Now, have you got professional help with this, or were you like, we know exactly what we want and we're just going to get somebody to fit it? Or was there a sense that somebody helped you design now this new space?
Yeah, do you know what? We were very lucky. We went to the paneling centre, and do you know what it is? There's as soon as you know you're going to do a renovation, the first thing you do is you jump onto Instagram or you jump onto Pinterest and you start looking at things, and you get very caught up in the aesthetics. And I think a big mistake that people make is that they choose aesthetics over functionality. Now, we're lucky enough in the sense that there's things I like, say like open shelving. Right, I think it looks great. It's very cool. Are you mad? It would never work in my house, because if you were to put Delver dishes up on it and it's being used every couple, like, who's going to keep rearranging it so it looks like that lovely showroom ready kind of, that just would never work. And we tried it before and it was just a constant nightmare. So yeah, I know a lot of people love things like oversized kitchen islands. And they're very trendy, and everyone goes, oh, my mates are, oh, we'd love one. We had one, and we hated it. Because it just, it's fine when the kids were little, but as they get bigger, it just becomes like the M50. And it's only when, it was actually only when it was in the paneling centre and they started talking us through the functionality. Like, really simple things, like, I'm right-handed, so if I'm standing at the sink, the dishwasher is to my immediate left. That's when I'm dropping something into the dishwasher. I know that that sounds neurotic, right? But it's functional. It's those little things that make a kitchen space work. The reason we don't like the big oversized, say, kitchen island or whatever it is because when we're cooking, we just want to cook. But we've so many people. You got to remember, if you have, say, six children, and they're all in the house at the same time, a lot of the time they're with friends.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're there as well. It's too many people to be hanging around me or Tanya while we're cooking. So we wanted a space that worked for us to cook in, that was nice and spacious to cook in, but then also had that kind of distance where if people wanted to lounge and sit down and have coffee and chat, and it was like a separate living space. But the kitchen is the heart of our house. It was the most important room.
Sure,
for us,
of course. Know? And I think for most people, that is probably the case. So if an island isn't your thing, and actually I thought it was the law now that every kitchen had to have a kitchen island. So there you go. That's kind of blown that myth out of the water. What about the drop lighting? Because that's the other kind of Instagram-y thing, having big baubles dropping from the sky. Did you go for that?
Like really nice. But sure, you're in shadows the whole time. You know, they don't really work. They look great. You know, if you're sitting in the evening at a kitchen table or something, but it kind of makes the prep area a little bit unsafe. You're doing something, there's glares in your eye. And the workspace is in shadow a lot of times. It's just not really, it's really not functional for us. Like even, do you know what, like, you know what really bougie is to have marble. And you think, God, yeah, that'd be lovely. It's expensive as well. And you think, yeah, marble would be great. You're mad. My kids. Because it stains. Everything stains it. Coffee, oil, lemon, juice. And they destroy it. Like, your heart would be broken. I'd be that guy running around with coasters. You know, one of them nightmares that runs around the kitchen just putting coasters under people.
Do you know what, like, Baz? You're coming across the grumpy old man of kitchens.
No, I am. Because do you know what I want? I just want people to live in the space. We're not precious, and we're not really, but we are home birds. So what I want is I want a house that's really welcoming and livable.
Now,
and I suppose I've been to other people's houses and they're like museums.
Yeah, everything's perfect and the plumped kitchens, the cushions.
I really love it. And yeah. I wish my family was able to do that, but they're just not, you know, they're just not. So for us to work, even when we're picking colours and things, but it's only when you talk to an expert, like they're great. They'll give you like a free consult. That's what we did. We just got a free consultation.
Yeah,
we walked through everything.
Yeah.
And it's only when you start talking, even us having a conversation with your friends, and you start talking about that space, that you start to realise, okay, you know, the door will open this way, the fridge door will open that way, and we're going to have space over here. Mm. And you have that beautiful mind moment where you're like, oh, I think this is going to work. Even colours, we went for really, like, a lot of white, a lot of plain white, a lot of very light colours, just because we're not really the type of people who are going to change the colour of the kitchen design every few days or anything, you know?
Right, so you're keeping it kind of neutral. Now, we are doing a summer series at the moment on The Home Show, talking to our News Talk colleagues about their DIY skill levels. We've had Anton Savage, who tried to kill himself several times. Where do you stand on the DIY? Are you going to tackle any of this work yourself?
No. No, I'm not. No,
that
I'm
sounds
not.
Clear.
I painted my house once after being coerced into it by Tanya, and I painted it. As you could see, as you went up along the house, it became sloppier. And then when I was finished, all the kids were pointing out bits that I'd missed. And Tanya was like, you don't feel good. You don't feel like a sense of pride. And I was like, no, I don't feel any of that. Like, ask me to write you a sonnet. I'll do it. Yeah. No bother.
All right. But, you know your limitations. That's fine.
I know where.
That's all right.
Actually, if I'm really honest, Tanya is very handy.
Okay.
She's brilliant. Like, she is really, really good. And the two oldest boys and Charlotte are really gifted.
Well, there you go. You can leave all that to the experts then in your house, it sounds like. Okay. Now, any idea when the whole thing will be finished? Are you sharing it with your journey on socials?
I've been very quiet about it because I don't know what it's going to end up like. But I'm hoping to get back in the summer now. Right. You know, we've kind of done it slowly, and like I say, it's not structural. It's just a bit of redesign. But I'm looking forward to getting home. You know,
what's next up for you on the TV front, Baz?
Oh well, I have more Money List DIY. I'm in the writing room at the moment. I'm doing that, and then we're working on some docs. And it's busy. It's busy, you know. But I love it that way. You know, I'm lucky. I get to do lots of different things, and it keeps me creatively happy. So,
it might get a bit busier now. It looks like the Late Late Host is up for grabs. I've seen you mentioned on some bookies' sheets. Would you be interested in something like that?
Ah, listen, you know, when the man calls, but sure, it's the Late Late, you know, it's an institution. Sure, you'd have to have the chat, wouldn't you?
You'd have to have the chat.
Have you had the chat? Not this year. I've had chats before, but... You know what? It's we'll leave that line. I'll fix the kitchen first.
Not much to say on that. All right, we'll watch this space. Watch this space. Okay. Well, Baz Ashmawi, I wish you the very best of luck now with that kitchen, and
thank
the very
so
best of luck to Nancy, who will be very relieved to move back into her empty home, I'm sure, after you're gone. Thanks a million for joining us on The Home Show.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
And you're very welcome back to The Home Show here on News Talk. I'm Sinead Ryan with you for the next while. And if you want to get in touch with us, it is thehomeshow@newstalk.com. Now, designing a home is a tough enough job at the best of times. But when you have additional needs, making sure it works for you is vital. So an interior designer has joined forces with an occupational therapist to do just that and form a company called the Era Collective. So joining me now to tell me all about what is involved is interior designer Elaine Fitzgerald and OT Martha Hume. Ladies, you're very welcome to the studio.
Thanks for
having us. Now, let's start with language, because I believe that you are not mad about the words accessible, practical, functional.
Yes.
But isn't that exactly what any home design is about?
So from my side, as an OT, housing adaptation was always a word. And we are really trying to change the narrative on that, because you redesign your home when you have kids, you redesign your home when you put in a home office, and you redesign your home as your needs change. So it's something around housing adaptation for me speaks to this sort of sense that maybe there's something wrong as such, when it's not that something's wrong, it's something that's natural that happens to all of us. So designing your home doesn't need to be waiting for the worst. It can be something that you do throughout your life, and just being aware of what your needs are and how do we address that in a way that's not ugly. And I think that's a big thing. You know, as an OT, I write housing assessments, and sometimes people almost, I feel like they read them with a capital letters of make it as ugly as possible, you know, and we're really trying to change that narrative that, you know, accessibility does not have to be ugly. It can be practical, it can be functional, but it can be beautiful, and it can be you as well, you know.
Because there is a sense when I talk about an accessible bathroom or an accessible room, I'm thinking of big, clunky, white handles.
Yes.
And, you know, kind of things hanging from the ceiling and, you know, it ramps. You know, things that, like, you're just, it's really, really chunky.
And clinical.
Big. And clinical, yeah.
And it just feels like it's not your home anymore. And that's something that kind of drove us to create the Era Collective, was hearing stories from people. So people of my age, parents who are getting that little bit older, who might need a little bit of extra help at home. And they don't want to use things because they feel like they're in a nursing home. And it's not. Then that's causing more accidents, and it's, you know, it's just creating a safer home if you do have these things in place, whether you need them or not. We all need a little bit of help, you know.
And I think on that, you know, people will come to me and say, you know, we have to get the bathroom done for granny. We need a wheelchair accessible bathroom. I'm trying to say, no, no, no. You need to get your bathroom done. You need to get your bathroom done up for where you're at now, you know, and, you know, pick your tile colours, pick your new mirrors, pick, you know, add your sense of who you are into that.
So do you think there's a bit of othering that we do about people who have additional needs and challenges?
Absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely.
I think in our country, there's some kind of a stigma around disability even of, oh my God, God love them. Oh God, isn't it awful? But there's so many amazing people in Ireland who are living with disabilities, going to work, having kids. That's their life. That's who they are. It's part of their identity. And it doesn't have to be this almost you're blessing yourself, you know, going down the street. You know, it's like we're not there anymore, you know, and really we need to be empowering each other to see that, you know, and to really recognise that, yes, you can have a disability, but you can also have
a great sense of style
and
joy in your home and surroundings and not feel like you're living in an adjunct of a kind of a hospital room.
Exactly, a hospital room.
Okay. So talk to me then, Elaine, about who your clients are and how they come to you.
So we really have a wide range of clients. So we work with people who have maybe children with neurosensory disabilities or people
they need additional help
in
the style and the design. Is that it?
The style and the design, but also in more of a sensory kind of function as well. So if you are living with neurodivergence of any kind, so anything can affect you. So the lighting, the textures, the feelings of things, but it affects everybody. It's not just neurodivergence. So that's what, I mean, that's where Martha and I kind of met and bonded over was our love of everything sensory. And that's where I kind of started in interior design was to do a lot of lighting and sensory design kind of implemented into the designs that I do.
How difficult is it marrying what one individual in a family needs and their very particular needs, but keeping it stylish for everybody and relevant for everybody? Because, you know, everybody, of course, gravitates and wants this child or person to be happy and to be comfortable in their surroundings and for the interiors to meet their needs.
Yeah.
But does that leave a gap then?
No, I mean, I think the most important thing is to remember that it's a whole family living in that house. And you know, if you think back to generations ago when there would be multi-generations living in homes, and we just have to kind of adapt that to now and the needs that, you know, a smaller child would need compared to, you know, if granny maybe moves in, and that it's a functional space for everybody. And that's basically what we want it to be, because you don't want your house to revolve around one person in the same way that, you know, you don't, it's just not normal. So, yeah, that's basically what.
So how does the process work then? Who comes to whom and how do you get involved, Martha?
It's very similar to what you just said there. So that idea of the whole family approach. So when I go in as the OT, you know, often there's one person kind of flagged, God love them, but that's not how I work. So you sit down, you talk to everyone in the household. What are their needs? What are their functional needs? What is their medical backgrounds? Do they have, you know, physical, sensory, cognitive, mental health needs? And then you, I suppose, take that and you sort of merge it in with the environmental element. So I'll create then an environmental assessment looking around the house. And then it's really sitting with that family and saying, okay, so yes, maybe I'm here for, let's say, Bobby, and Bobby needs, you know, maybe a sensory space where they can go and calm down after they come home from school. Mm. But also Dad's there and Dad's pretty stressed out in work, and actually he also needs a space maybe as well. So, you know, it is about maybe changing or kind of opening up the narrative a bit more to say you're all allowed to take up space in this house and to feel safe in this house.
Yeah.
And then from there, then I hand over to Elaine, and Elaine basically takes those recommendations and works with the family to say, okay, well, what's your style like, you know? Mm. And Elaine then kind of, you can take it from there, I suppose.
Yeah. So then we just make it into a home then that suits everybody and, you know, feels like Martha was saying, that feels safe and feels... Yeah, it feels like everybody can use the space.
As I say, so are you functionally, are you literally designing plans, like kind of an architectural plan to say, look, we need a corridor going from here to here, or we need no soft furnishings here, or, you know, we need to be able to get a wheelchair to access here?
It completely depends on the client. Yeah. So like, you know, although we work with, like, obviously the young neurodivergent families, we also work with people across the age, you know. So someone who's looking to future-proof, for example, I might review those plans and say, look, given maybe your height and his height, you know, maybe we need to look at that and say, okay, the turning space might need to be a little bit more, a little bit less. You know, I see you put a hinge door there. Would we look at maybe a sliding door? And just exploring those options with them. And then Elaine then can offer choice. And choice is the key word there. It's not a case of saying, well, you need a grab rail. Here's your grab rail. It's going, okay, maybe a grab rail could be useful here. Here's multiple options. Which one do you like best? You know?
Is there such a thing? Is there anybody working in the field of providing stylish grab rails or interesting ramps or something that just doesn't look as if it's a medical piece of equipment?
Yes. So I just went to Milan and went to a huge, huge trade show and found multiple companies that are offering really stylish, particularly grab rails. And then that works as well with other products that we can put into the bathroom so that it looks intentional. It doesn't look like
there's somebody here with a disability.
Exactly. Okay. And then ramps and things. I mean, ramps are so easy to not make ugly. It's so easy.
Are they? I've never seen it.
Exactly. It's so difficult to imagine something that doesn't look like what we all have in our heads right now.
Yeah.
But it's so easy. Like, there's so many different resins that you can use. Like, just
colour.
Colour. My God, why are we so afraid of colour?
Yeah.
There's so much that you can do.
But it's funny, Sinead, you say that because you probably have, but you didn't register them as a ramp. You know, and that's usually
true, the key
thing. Yeah, that, so
it's kind of just subsumed into the environment of the,
exactly.
of the footprint.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where can people find out more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so we're online. We have an Instagram, era, E-Y-O-R-A .collective. But we also have our website, so www.eracollective.com.
Okay. And it is beautiful. I mean, you'd never look at that website and think this is for, dealing with kind of medical sensory and disability.
Thank you.
All right. Well, listen, thank you, ladies, for coming in. Very, very interesting stuff.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's and you know, continued success. And it's an unusual collaboration. So I hope it continues to go well for you.
Thank you so, so much. Really appreciate it.
Now, we spoke last week on The Home Show about food waste and how to manage your kitchen and fridge better to try and cut down on it. But this week, we're going one step further to see if you can make money from your waste. My GUG, I hope I've got that right, is a biogas converter to use at home and creates energy to be used for cooking or in the garden as a fertiliser. Well, here to tell us more is Fiona Kelleher, co-founder of the manufacturer Amu Green. Fiona, welcome to The Home Show. Did I get that right? Is that what it's called?
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Sinead. Lovely to be here. It is. Yes, it's called MyGUG and it's a home-based food waste energy system.
Now, let's start with the science bit. How does it work?
So what MyGUG is it's a technology that is harnessing a natural process. So if you imagine food waste in landfill, what happens there is that the food decomposes and it produces two products. One is methane gas that goes into the atmosphere, causing real damage to our ozone layer, in fact, which is 32 times more potent than carbon dioxide. And the second is a leachate or a liquid that then leaks into the landfill and causes problems with contamination, etc. So what we've done is we've taken that natural process, anaerobic digestion, which is a decomposing process, and we've captured that and harnessed it in a small technology that's suitable for homes. And what it will do is it will take all of your food waste, the cooked waste, the raw waste, the contaminated food waste, and turn it into those two things, a gas energy, which can be used for cooking in your home, and then a fantastic liquid feed for your garden and for your soil.
Right, so it kind of does the whole lot there, and it's harnessing, as you say, a natural process, just kind of speeding it up and putting it on speed, really. Okay, what's your own background? How do you come to be doing this, Fiona?
So my own background actually is in the creative arts and in communications, and it's my husband and co-founder that is the inventor and designer of the product, and he's an environmental engineer. And he worked in public service for a long time, and one of his roles was looking at food waste and in landfill. And when he was in landfill, he was always really appalled by what he saw, and he was really compelled to do something that would help that, because as we know, the statistics tell us that householders are the biggest generators of food waste in terms of volume, which is kind of hard to believe, but it's true, and it's a fact here in Ireland, and it's also a fact globally. So we actually are, that's where the problem is most acute. So we wanted to provide a solution at the point where it's more acute. So he designed something. We were using it at home for years and found it really good. We have three kids who were generating quite a bit of food waste. And it was a problem for us managing it. It was causing contamination. It was costly to get rid of. We were in a rural community. So it was even more difficult from that perspective. And the food waste that was most difficult was the cooked waste, the dinner waste, the liquids, stuff that can be kind of hard to deal with in composting. So he created this small-scale anaerobic digester. It sat in our garden. It provided us with abundant cooking energy, which was really exciting for us. And then also we were able to use the liquid feed in the garden. So it created circular economy at home. So that's really how we started.
Now, what does the householder have to do? How big is this thing? Where does it go? And what is the requirement for it to work?
So it sits in your back garden or in your outdoor space, in your yard. It's small. It's about the same size as a wheelie bin, as a 140 litre wheelie bin, if you can imagine that. So it's about that size. So it would replace that bin, for instance. And then all we need is to have a line into the house to put your gas cooker in, which we also provide. And that's it. You plug and play. There's no underground works. There's no, you know, necessary kind of civil works or anything like that. It's a plug and play item. And that's really important because householders need to be facilitated to do it easily.
Indeed, because there's a lot of these recycling options and we've seen it with the bottles being returned and all that, that you have to make it simple. You have to make it straightforward for people or they won't do it. Now, there is a huge push on home improvements aimed at generating power, like solar panels. You can give back to the grid now and heat pumps and all that. Do you see that as part of that conversation, as you called it, that circular energy, using what we already have naturally to make energy?
Yeah, completely. There's no doubt about it. And I mean, we would be big fans of all kinds of technologies that will allow you to have secure energy at home, that will allow you to have independence where you're not depending on the grid, where you're thinking, look, I don't have to worry about rising energy prices to a greater degree because I create my own energy. It's most certainly part of that circle. And in fact, what it will do is it will close that loop further for you. If you do have solar panels, if you're interested in EVs, if you're looking at all of that, this is a great product for you because you do have a resource on site that you're generating every single day that can be turned into something of economic value and will allow you to have further energy security.
Now, like all of those items, though, there's an initial outlay and then a payback time where you get it. So talk to me about MyGoog. Is it expensive and what's the payback time on it for households?
Yeah, so as sustainable technologies go, it's actually quite competitive from that perspective. So we know the solar panels are quite costly. MyGoog would sit well below that. So the cost of that is 3450, and that includes your installation and delivery. Everything is done for you, set up, complete, everything is done, and you're good to go with that initial outlay. The return on that investment is around 4 years payback, which again is highly competitive compared to other sustainable technologies. But that's not to say that we wouldn't value those other technologies as well. We really believe that we all need to be working together. And the more that we can all do with supports, the better.
Now, you've been trialling this in schools, in island communities. Tell me what you've been doing down in Cape Clear in West Cork.
Yeah, so really interesting and exciting project in Cape Clear Island, where the problems that we deal with in our households that we've described around food waste are magnified there. And the reason for that is that they're an island community, so they don't have easy access to transport for getting rid of their food waste. So what that means then is that they're dealing with the issues that we understand, the storage, contamination, odours, etc., etc., for a longer period of time. And because of that, they end up doing things that they don't want to do. They might say, look, well, what else can we do with our food waste? Will we compost it? Will we bury it? What can we do? So these islanders, who are very progressive and are very much about sustainability, decided to use MyGoog because they saw two things that were going to be of benefit. One was that in times of blackouts or energy security difficulties, they would always have cooking energy. And the second was that they would be dealing with their food waste in the best possible way. It would deal with all their food waste every single week. So no storage, no transport problems, no issues there. So what they've done is they've created a circular economy. And in fact, they are the first island globally to do that with this technology, and they are absolutely flying it. They've become reliant on their cooking energy. It's supplying their community kitchen, and they use it in the local pub as well,
which is
now running completely on renewable energy. So, from that perspective,
plenty of beer
it's
going down
exciting.
The pipes there now. You know that's great energy in fermented products and beer. All right. Well, where can people find out more about MyGoog?
So you can go to our website, which is amugreen.com. There's several pages there that you might look at. There's one called My Gug for Home, which is in the drop-down menu. There's one for communities. There's also our very exciting climate education work in schools that we do. So there's loads of information there. We've got lovely case studies as well. So lots of information. And if anybody wanted to reach out directly, if they go to hello@amugreen.com, they'll get in touch with us and we'll be back very quickly.
Well, that's great. Fiona Kelleher, co-founder of Cork-based green tech company Amu Green, and it's My Gug product. Thank you so much for joining us on
The
Home Show today.
Not at all. Thank you, Sinead.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
Welcome back to The Home Show here on News Talk. I'm Sinead Ryan with you till the top of the hour. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it is thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on socials, Instagram and X. Now, you might be a child like myself of the 70s or the 80s, and if so, you probably remember rooms containing lots of brown furniture. There's dressers and tables and chairs and sideboards, mahogany and oak and veneer plastic versions of that. Well, it's making a comeback, which could be very good or very bad news, depending on your point of view. But if anybody can make it stylish and interesting, it is Natasha Rocket Devine, who joins me now.
Thank you very much.
Part of me wants to rail against this feature because I'm like, no, no, don't bring that all back. It's kind of really old fashioned, a bit like leg warmers. You know, they've no place in the world today. Talk to me about the why.
I think it is a very relaxing and grounding space to have brown in your interiors. But I think it's probably seen more in commercials. So when you think about hotels, you're always going to see mahogany bookshelves and cases and stuff like that. And I think it is becoming more trendy to have wood panels, you know, in the library wall or on furniture. But I think it's how you use it. And it's also in, like everything, it depends on the context of your home. You know, if your home is really modern, I think you can get away with it a lot more. You know, kind of a sleek kind of style. Whereas I think if it's quite traditional, I think it's harder because it's quite a strong colour. Even though you would think it's relaxing, it's quite intense. You know, if you've got too much brown, it can be quite sleepy and a little bit, I wouldn't say depressing, but you have to mix it up with colour and just to balance that out.
Yeah. And is there something about kind of brown furniture that it just looks bulky, just of its colour?
Yeah, I think it's, as you said, it's we were talking about this earlier, it's a strong colour. Like black, I think, can be really sleek. You know, there's something stylish about black. It's got a high vibration or there's something about it. Whereas brown, it can be very, like you say, dated. There's something about, for me, it's a very much a masculine colour. It's very bachelor. So I've staged a couple of properties for Owen Wiley and different people. And every single time, you know, those big brown leather couches, like I could literally box tick that when I arrive, there's going to be at least two of these couches or chairs, because you know that like they're friends' chairs, you know those friends.
Oh, had Owen Riley. He's a brilliant estate agent, but he has a very specific market, and he's in the city centre, and a lot of Googlers.
Yes,
so a lot
it's
of
very
the high rent sleek. And is that that's what they want then?
No. So when I go in to take out the furniture, we'd always have the brown one. So as you said, it's quite dated. So I would just know whether it's dark brown or light brown. They would always have these like signature brown things, and it's for me, it's like a phase. No judgment on anyone, but it's like the bachelor phase or bachelorette phase.
Get over here, grow up.
It's like, so for me, it's like bringing that in a very sleek way. And I think I've incorporated some images here to, you know, you can do it in a different way.
Now, as ever, of course, when you bring in some of your images and how to style, it all looks fabulous. And there's not, I'm completely wrong. And I mean, what was I thinking? But actually, I'm going to stick with my point just for the moment. But you have started out with a colour that actually has made a massive comeback, and it is a very, very popular warming colour, and that's like a chocolate brown.
Absolutely. I think it is. It's a different kind of brown, like as in it's got a warmth to it. And I think if you balance it against different features, or you put in a bookshelf, or if you have it as a statement chair, it's how you use it. And I think it's just really important, as I said, to look at your space. And that's something that like is integral to any interiors tip, is just bringing it in the right way and balancing it. But I do think it's really important that you, it's quite, as I said, it's quite a dark sleepy colour, so make sure that the room is well lit up, you know, it's balanced against colourful accessories and things like that. But I do think it's becoming like the new neutral. Instead of the grey, chocolate brown is kind of on trend now.
Yeah, and it's a very, very strong neutral. So if you had this on a wall or like a feature wall, I mean, it really benefits from a very high pigmented paint like Farrow and Ball or the Colour Trend. Something that makes it look powdery.
100% to balance it. And we have, as an example in our house, we have a TV. So we have like panels from Cucina Libre behind the TV, and we have a white kind of, just a TV standard, but we have a kind of freestanding. So it's balanced against a really nice kind of white chrome kind of, it's built in unit, and the TV covers it, so it's quite sleek, as in like you can only see kind of corners of a chenille, but it's a chocolate brown, so it's a perfect balance. So you could put it as behind a TV, you could put it, you know, for TV
like
stands.
A frame.
Exactly. Okay. I think that's a really good idea to put it behind something or art, you know, or like, you know, it doesn't have to be panelled, but it could be a chocolate brown painted wall, like farm wall, but you know, just things like that, just to balance it out, or an art wall, you know, things just to make sure it's not just really intense in your face.
And of course, one of the other ways we can use brown, dark brown on walls is as panelling. Now, you know, you can go back to the Tudor period and you'll find brown panelling on walls, but there actually is lovely modern panelling options available.
Yeah, so that's actually what we have. We've got panelling in ours, and you can have different types. You can have, you know, just as you said, very traditional or modern. Ours is modern panelling, and it's actually a really fantastic way, especially in a small space, Sinead, because everyone thinks, oh, you have to have a big house and like it's not, or my house is not a hotel or whatever, but actually just in a nook you can have panelling. It can be a great feature, and then you could put in, for example, a bookshelf, like colourful books, you know. It's just about what you put against it, and as I said, I think the light levels in that room and things like that, you either embrace it fully, like as in have it really dark and cozy, like a hotel room, like boutique, or you have to make sure there's a lot of light around it, or natural
and
light,
punchy colours.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, walls are one thing, and feature colours and all that, and or even throws. But when it comes to the furniture itself, incorporating, so how are we going to make it not look like, you know, somebody moved out in the 1980s and didn't bother taking their furniture with them? Is it the texture? Is it the structure of the furniture?
Yeah, absolutely. That's just exactly what I was going to say. It's the texture. So I've obviously included images. So if you have like more round and oval, soft, like feminine, I think that's it. The thing is, I see it as a very masculine colour, even though people might not think that. So I think if you add in the kind of feminine round touches and velvets and things like that, it just softens it, you know, just different textures. And so, and obviously we're so blessed here. We have so many furniture. Like we have Harvey Norman, DFS, HomeSense. I mean, there's even vintage ones, like you have so many vintage shops here. Like you can mix it up, and you can also put on, you know, I'm such a fan of like couch covers.
Yes.
You can put on that as well. So it's about how the, like the space and the style of the furniture. And I think also probably smaller furniture. Like I said, there's bachelor big leather couches remind you of, you know, that here you're like stay away kind of era about brown furniture. Mm. Whereas if you have softer, like smaller, more bespoke, or kind of an accent chair or a love seat, I think it's better than a really big bulky brown leather couch. And no judgment if anyone has them. They're great for kids, you can wipe them off, but just trying to be on style here.
Now, one of the colour matches that work well with this, because it is a neutral, you know, so like your creams and your greys and all that, brown is going to work as a background colour, but metallic tones can work quite well. Now, I remember there was a whole kind of trend back in the 70s that after that kind of Van der Rohe kind of chair with black or brown leather seats and then these silver chrome handles and chrome legs on it. But it does actually work quite well.
I think so. I think it just makes it look, as you said, like it gives a historic feeling. And I always bring it back to the fact, you know, we forget, myself included, like we're from Ireland, like we've such beautiful buildings and history and like, you know, just houses, estates. Like for me, the chrome brings back a sense of like historic luxury, you know, just having like, you know, whether it's the feet of the chair or just like accents through it. And if you see even flooring, herringbone, a real big trend is putting a bit of gold or brass in it. Obviously it's not real gold, but yeah, it's a really big trend, especially in London, like in modern flats and stuff like that. But I do think having that element in, whether it's on like the frame of a table, you know, if you have like brown legs and like a marble or whatever that is, I just think it just adds a sense. It's like putting on a red lipstick or something, you know, it just adds that kind of, it balances the brown.
So have it in handles or have it in kind of in the structural end of the furniture.
Exactly.
And allow the brown
with
to
handles
shine
you
then.
Can swap them, Sinead. So that's a blessing, you know, everyone loves DIY, so you could just swap them out with gold handles. Go to HomeSense, go to, you know, whatever your vintage shop, or just Woody's, and just grab gold handles and literally put them on. So you could have a piece of brown furniture but actually just swap out the handles, and it just it gives a sense of luxury, I think. And then you could have a gold tray on top if it's a console or something. So it's just balancing it out. And I think gold works better with silver personally on brown.
Yeah. And that brushed kind of gold
is a lovely
colour with that. So, and the handles are like, they're such an easy switch out,
100%.
Aren't they?
Even on kitchen cabinets and everything, they are.
just
I can do
it.
If I can do it, you can do it.
Okay. You don't have to paint over it straight away. Okay. So in terms then of textures, so when we think of brown furniture, all I am thinking of is mahogany. And not always very well made mahogany. But there's lots and lots of other textures that it works with as a colour.
Yeah, you can have like brown stone, you know, like obviously my family are in tiling. You can think of like all the like fresco walls, you know, even just that look. It's just you can have it like, again, it doesn't have to be like chocolate brown, but you could have a brown like couch, let's say, against like a textured wall, or like brown tiles in a bathroom against a bath. You could have it like in mosaics, you could, or like even just London tiles. Mm. You know, that's really popular. Like you could have brown London tiles against like
these
a cream kitchen.
These are the shiny, they look as if you're in the underground.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but they're hugely fashionable.
And they're also a reasonable price, you know. So you could have it in a way, you could have mosaics. Like you see in wet rooms, there's a lot of kind of like sparkly, like mosaic tiles or whatever. Mm. But yeah, I love everything sparkly. I'm trying to bring it in
the
here.
The terrazza kind
of
look.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So obviously I think of me, like I love the idea of bringing it in that way. So you could balance it, or you could balance it against, for example, if you had like cream terrazza or whatever that is, you could have like a brown slate in the wet room. You could have it on the floor, or you could have it against like a brown wallpaper, you know, in the bathroom or a paint. So I think it's about how you balance it. But I do think adding in textures against the walls, you know, like paneled walls or in a bathroom against like, just like texture. Like just adding layers. And I think it just gives a sense of luxury. You know, wet rooms in particular, the walls are like fresco.
So the brown becomes just like a solid base on which to work off.
Yeah.
And it's quiet and it's doing its job in the background.
Exactly. Or if it's a feature wall, you have to balance it with another colour, you know, with a marble countertop. Or like I actually saw, I think I've included in the images, a brown sink with a marble top. Like that's beautiful. It's very stylish. But that's all it is. It's a bit like, you know, the unexpected theory, you know, we were saying about red. It's like keep it simple. And I think it's really actually better as a feature in, you know, in smaller spaces. I think if you've got a bigger space, it's fine. But I think in a bathroom or a wet room or a kitchen, just keep it kind of in a more low-key way.
Minimal. Now, all these images, by the way, Natasha brings in every week to me and I just get lost in going through them.
Me too. I take hours. I was like, my partner's like, what do you do? I was like, work for Sinead. Like hours, like obsessing over images.
We appreciate it every single time you're in. But they are also going to be up, or some of them, on your Instagram
page. Yes, I will. I'll put them all up.
So where can people find that?
Natasha Rocca Divine on Instagram.
Okay. Now, one of the things about, you know, this dark brown, the first thing you think about, of course, it's a natural product because it comes from trees, which are also brown. So there's nothing nicer than walking into a very, very old home and seeing brown floorboards that have been treated properly, planks, actual wood. So that's somewhere that we definitely can embrace it. Is there a style option in painting your deal floorboards, your regular floorboards, dark brown?
Yeah, you can get different kind of sealants and paints, and obviously it depends on, you know, who's using the space. We had we worked with Map Britain on our house and we got herringbone, and obviously they're natural hardwood engineered, so like we obviously got ours made, but we have that effect. It's like dark wood mahogany, because I love that effect. I love the idea of walking into an old house. However, a few parties in and some dogs and heels, and it's not looking, there's a few scratches on it, but actually it just, we obviously got them already made, but I know people who have like lighter pine or whatever that is, just lighter wood, and they just seal over it. Yeah, exactly. You just put a sealant over it. It's just making sure you get the right one. I think that's imperative and everything. And obviously asking Woody's or whatever shop you go into. But I do think it's such a fantastic way, because when you walk into our house, we have it down and we have like tiles, and then you walk into this dark space and it's so relaxing, Sinead. It's a very grounded. I think it's a fantastic place to put dark wood on a floor. It just grounds you. There's something relaxing. It gives a vintage style. It's relaxing. And also you can mix it up with colour. We have a cream rug on it, so it softens it. But I do think it's fantastic. And if you don't have that, you can sand it down and, you know, get a varnish over it, or even in the garden as well. You know, I think just mix it up, find a way to bring it in. And I think it's really great. I think the floor is probably the best bet, because it's just, you want to be grounded in that.
It totally grounds you, and you nearly just feel like it's natural and it's supposed
relaxing.
To be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you have converted me. I am going to take a look at that 1980s dresser in a new way.
Yeah, you can get new handles and put wallpaper or something on the inside.
A little bit of brushed gold and something on top. Well, that's lovely. All right. Well, Natasha, we always are delighted when you come in, and you do an awful lot of work for us. So thank you so much for that. You can find Natasha on her Instagram site, Natasha Rocca Divine. She'll put up some of those pictures that I have been ogling over while I've been chatting to her here. And that's all we have time time for this week on the Home Show podcast. Hope you enjoyed those different elements that we had. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's thehomeshow@newstalk.com. If there's a guest you'd like us to have on or a topic you'd like us to cover in the interiors and home space, well then we would love to hear from you. I'm over on X and Instagram. And don't forget to check out, of course, any episode you've missed up on the Go Loud app. Thanks to producer Aoife Breen. Stephen McLoone was on sound, and we'll be back here next week with the next episode.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday at 5 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.